Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, let us continue. So we are now in the second session of Rabbi Hirsch's commentary. Again, as I like to just briefly highlight what we're doing, we are now in the story of Sodom and Amor, the destruction of the two cities, Sodom and Gomorrah. The story of its destruction was relatively short in the Torah, maybe 15 verses long, the whole story. And the story comprised of two parts. First part was the inner dialogue that God has with himself to inform Avraham that he plans on destroying the city. And then the second half of the story was the actual dialogue between Hashem and Avraham, in which Avraham intercedes on their behalf and prays, maybe there are enough righteous people to spare the city, 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10, and that whole dialogue, which we broke down into the two different components of the story. We went through the text, we went through Rashi, we went through the Ramban, which you all remember, I am sure. Test will be coming up soon, right before Rosh Hashanah. And we started now the commentary of Rav Hirsch. We went through the first day of that, and now we're going to be doing section number two. So that's where we're up to, just to give you the context of that, what we'll be doing. The brief summary of what we did last week, which is what we need for this week, is Rav Hirsch contrasted on page 318 it starts. We're going to begin, just to give you the layout of the land, we began the commentary on the top of page 318 on your sheets. We got up to the middle of page 320, which is where we will start this afternoon. What we need, the main idea that we need as far as a summary, is that the men in verse 16, the angels, who Avraham did not know were angels, he thought they were men. The story introduces this element, the Torah introduces this story, that the men who had come to visit Avraham, who was recovering from his bris milah, from his own circumcision, had finished with Avraham, and they now left to go to Sodom. And we're told that as the narrative, that they had gotten up, they had left, and Avraham walked them out. And Rav Hirsch made a big deal about that little episode, in which he's going to continue that thought, not just last week in the piece that we read, but this week as well, that what the angels experienced were contrasts. They experienced the pillars of what Avraham built his home upon, which were two pillars. One was the concept of milah, of circumcision, which was a pact between man and God, in which man would subjugate all of his earthly desires and urges and say, I will sanctify myself, I will raise myself above myself. I will become bigger than the animal physical body that I'm contained in and allow my soul to soar. And that is represented by the concept of circumcision, the milah, the pact between man and between God. The second pillar that the angels experienced was they were fed, they were wined and dined by Avraham, so that they experienced the east-west relationship in which man reaches out to his fellow man and says, let me take care of you. So that they left the house in which they witnessed a man giving up his body, so to speak, for God, and then giving up his body, so to speak, for mankind. Doing those two simultaneous acts, and Rav Hirsch contrasted that from there, what do they look upon? They see the base elements of stone, the lust, the desire, the unwillingness to take in a stranger into their midst. And that was sort of the contrast that we see. And we see that specifically in the verse that we're going to now pick up on, in terms of, we're in the middle of this particular verse, in which, verse 19, when Hashem is having his inner dialogue about his need to tell Avraham, Avraham, he already spoke about, was his close companion. That was the phrase of, ki yida'ativ, because I know him. And which Rav Hirsch understood, as we saw last week, means that Avram has chosen to live his life as my agent. In the same way as an angel is the agent of God in a spiritual sense, a human being can become an agent of God in a very physical sense, in carrying out his mission, and because he has dedicated his life to him, therefore I know him intimately, which Rav Hirsch understood to mean my divine intervention, my divine role in his life will be greater than in others' lives. The more that we dedicate ourselves to God's life and his mission, so he very correspondingly will say, well, then I will pay more attention to you and give you a little bit more extra attention as well. As we said, right, the teacher in the classroom knows which students everybody gets paid attention to. Some students get a little bit extra attention. They get a little bit extra help. So in the same way, so each one of us has the option to dedicate our lives in a certain way, and in doing so we'll correspondingly receive a little bit extra attention as well. Okay, that was all summary of what we did last week. What we're up to is the phrase we're going to read. Let's read the verse inside, and then we'll be in the middle of that. Of verse 19. So the phrase on the top of the page is on page 320. This is God's inner dialogue, and he says, why do I need to tell Avraham? Because I have given him my special care. Leman asher yitzave es bonovi es beiso acharav, so that he will command his children and his household after him. V'shamru derech Hashem, that they shall keep the way of God. La'asos tztaka u'mishpat, to do benevolence, tztaka, and mishpat, and justice, in order that God may bring upon Avraham that which he has spoken to him. The phrases that we're going to be speaking about today is this concept. So why does God say he needs to tell Avraham? Because it's Avraham who's going to walk in my way of the way of God, the Derech Hashem. He's going to follow in my path, and he's going to do tztaka and mishpat. These are going to be the two pillars. The Derech Hashem, the way of God, is going to refer to the spiritual man-God relationship that Avraham is going to follow in. And he's also going to be involved in the man-to-man relationship, which is comprised of tzedakah and mishpat. Now, tzedakah and mishpat are two phrases. Tzedakah means, it means to give charity, so to speak. It's loosely translated. We spent a lot of time, if you remember, in a previous session discussing the root of the meaning of tzedakah. But we'll leave that as alright. Basically, giving to your fellow mankind. And what about mishpat? Mishpat means more of justice. It's not man to man in a way of, I'm giving in a way that is a charitable type of giving. It's, this is right. This is appropriate behavior. This is justice. But it's a man to man justice. In other words, we all want to live in a society where man treats his fellow man with justice. It has to be that way. We also want to live in a society where man treats his fellow man with tzedakah. Those are two separate concepts. We're going to speak about them both. So just summarizing what we're going to get into. So it first points out in this pasuk, why does God say I need to tell Avram about the impending doom of the city? Because he will embody these two ideas. One of Derech Hashem, the way of God, the man-to-God relationship of keeping my laws. And he's also going to represent man to man, which is comprised of two things, both tzedakah and of mishpat. Those two things. That's what we're going to get into right now. Okay, let's start with the second full paragraph on the page, on page 320. Beginning with the phrase, the task. Everybody have where I am? Mm-hmm. Okay, you all pass. The task for which Avraham is to bring up his descendants is called Lishmor Derech Hashem, to keep the path indicated by God, the way of God. That's how we define what's Avraham's task: to teach his children to follow the way of God. And to do tzedakah and mishpat, practicing acts of duty and of justice. One, the former, meaning the concept of the way of God, carries out the hishalich lefonei Hashem v'heyotimim, walk before God and be perfect in His ways, which is the holy, pure, moral life before God. That's the Derech Hashem, the way of God, represents that element of our life which is between man and between God, to which bris milah lays the foundation. The concept of circumcision represents the foundation of how man will relate to God in a pure, moral life. And the second element of tzedakah and mishpat is living humanely and benevolently with one's fellow man, as was also shown by example through Avraham. And together, they constitute the most complete contrast to Sodom, the former to the immorality, and the latter to the hardness of heart. You know, the Torah used two words to describe Sodom, ro'im v'chatoim. They were evil and they were sinners, and refers to saying, that's referring to these two pillars. They were evil in their relationship to God, they were immoral, and they were nasty when it came to their fellow man. And in those two, those are the two basic broad stroke planes that we look to. We say, are you being a good Jew? Are you being a good person? What's your relationship with God like? What's your, in terms of morality? What's your relationship to fellow man like in terms of how you treat him? And Sodom was, of course, the complete contrast to Avraham. Okay, now, tzedakah and mishpat. Which one of these two concepts should come first? Tzedakah is giving benevolently of your resources to somebody who needs them. Mishpat represented by justice, doing that which is correct.
Justice first.
Justice
would generally come first. And Rav Hirsch is going to point out, in the Torah, it almost always does. Yet here, the order is reversed. Here, we're actually going to see tzedakah coming first. And let us take a look at his commentary to see why. Now, one other question. Let me mention his question outside before we read it inside. If you look at both the Hebrew and the English translation of this verse, there are two pillars, of course, as we've been discussing. There's the Derech Hashem, the way of God, and then there's the doing righteousness and charity. The verse does not list them, that Avram's task is to do both things. He needs to do this, and, capital A-N-D, he needs to do that. If you look carefully, that's not the way the verse describes the relationship between these two, the north-south relationship and the east-west relationship. Look carefully at the verse. Vishamru derech Hashem in the Hebrew, that he will safekeep the way of God. La'asos, in order to do benevolence to his fellow man. Which is an interesting concept. Not that he needs to do two things, man-God relationship and man-man relationship, but that he needs a man-God relationship so that he can do a man-to-man relationship. The implication being, you will never succeed in your man-to-man relationship if you're not basing it on a man-to-God relationship. And Refresh is going to note that simple difference in the verse. Instead of saying the word and, it says in order to, implying that the reason why you need to have the Derech Hashem, the way of God, is because without that, you will not succeed how to do it. You will come up with a system, but it will not be the system of how to interact with your fellow man. Let's take a look. Paragraph beginning with the phrase now. Now, Avraham's tzava, his command, does not say, he writes the Hebrew, Shamru derech Hashem ve'asu, does not say, do the way of God and relate with tzedakah and mishpat to your man, but it says, keep the way of God in order to keep your relationship with your fellow man. Says Rav Hirsch, just as God made bris milah, circumcision, the foundation stone of his people, meaning that we give ourselves our bodies between man and God, just as later in his Torah, chok, meaning law that we don't understand between man and between God, nearly always comes before mishpat, justice between man and man, first we follow the law of God, then we can follow the laws between man and man. First, those laws that plant and keep the whole of our bodily life of the senses within the limits of purity and holiness, and then those laws which regulate our life with our fellow man. That's the order that we find. Be pure, be moral, follow the godly precepts, then you'll be able to relate to your fellow man. So we have the same phrase here, Shamru Derech Hashem, be a pure moral life before God, so that's a preliminary condition and source for a truly just life of righteousness with our fellow men. Listen to this phrase coming up. Only a generation conceived, born, and brought up in the lap of the laws, the chukim, the laws of the Torah, and continuing therein is made apt and capable to live a life of tzedakah and mishpat in the sense which God's Torah demands. The keeping of the mitzvah shebein adam l'makom, the keeping of the laws between man and his God, is the preliminary condition and the root of all man's laws between man and his fellow man. A generation that is degenerating morally has also no social future. He writes beautifully, poetically. He writes a beautiful poetry. I should actually say it right if I'm talking about the poetry of his words, right? If you're not morally sharp, if you're not abiding by the laws of morality as truth is given to us by the Torah, so you will have a system of justice. You'll have a system of how to relate to your fellow mankind. But the future of social justice cannot stand unless it's predicated on a moral platform that's between man and God. And therefore, we always find, first in the Torah, your morality, in the way that the Torah puts it forth, keeping these laws, and then you'll be able to know how to relate to your fellow mankind. Very, very interesting insight that Rav Hirsch picks up on, the simple nuance of the language of keeping the way of God in order to do righteous and justice to your fellow mankind. That's what's necessary. Okay, shall we? Let us move on. Okay, now, within the East-West relationship, the relationship between man and his fellow man, we noted that there are two words used here in the Chumash, in the Pasuk. One is tzedakah and one is mishpat. Both are on the pillar of man to man, and that pillar contains two different relationships between man and fellow man. One is tzedakah and one is mishpat. Now, listen, let's go through the way that he defines the difference between them, and I believe that the concept that we are going to discuss this afternoon, of tzedakah is one of the most fundamental, if not spoken about enough, concepts in the Jewish version, the understanding of what tzedakah is. And I want to open that discussion with the idea that when we think of tzedakah, what is the English word we use? We used it a few moments ago.
Charity.
Now, what's the connotation of charity?
Negative. Kind
of, what's that?
Negative.
Why negative?
You're looking down on someone, looking maybe, and giving...
Yeah. What about from the perspective of the giver? What's the responsibility of the giver? What does the word charity connote?
Justice.
Optional.
Is really like now, justice is the Hebrew word tzedek. But the word charity is a word which I think has a connotation of, optional is the right word. It's, I don't need to do this. Like, I must pay my taxes. But charity is my own benevolence. But the Hebrew word is not that way. The Hebrew word tzedek is actually justice, which is a strange word for it. So at the end of the day, tzedakah is someone coming to my door and I'm giving him something of mine. But the Hebrew word is tzedakah. This piece that we're about to read from Rav Hirsch is going to define the essence of a Jewish approach to giving of oneself. It says Rav Hirsch, the bottom of page 320, tzedakah u'mishpat. We've already recognized that whereas Mishpat designates something that a person has the right to demand from another. Mishpat is justice. Mishpat is, this is the law. My boundary goes up to here, your boundary starts there. I have a right to demand that you not stand or encroach upon my property. I have a right to demand that. In business dealings, if the price is like this, or if the deal is that you have to pay by this time or another time, I have a right to demand from you that you abide by the laws of Mishpat. That's what justice means. It's the system that governs our behavior. That's Mishpat. Tzedakah, when refers from man to man, means sometimes he's just commenting that tzedakah sometimes refers to God to us, but he's not referring to that. When we talk about tzedakah between man and a fellow man, it designates something which in itself no man has the right to demand from another. No one can knock on my door and demand the right that I give him money. My neighbor can knock on my door and demand that I remove my property, my things, from his property. He can demand that. No one can demand tzedakah. But, top line on page 321, but which God has given everybody the right, not indeed to demand, but to be justified in expecting it. Very powerful phrase. I can't demand tzedakah. but I can demand, I have the right to expect it. Meaning that every single Jew sees the system and knows his role. So I can't demand that you do something, but I have the right to expect that as a Jew, you will come forward and help me. That's a very different concept than Mishpat. Mishpat is the right to demand this behavior. Tzedakah, I have the right to expect that a Jew is not going to turn me away empty-handed.
That's where moral comes in.
You got it. Let's read what he says here. Mishpat is simply justice. Tzedakah, benevolence, but regarded as duty. The Jewish community has a duty to be benevolent. Mm. Right? It's a beautiful way of looking at it that says we have a responsibility to be kind. It's not that it's above and beyond. It's not that it's optional. No. We have a responsibility as a people to be giving. We have a responsibility as a people to be kind. We have a responsibility to share so that every other person in the community has a right to expect that everyone else in the community will be kind and giving and benevolent. And that's a magnificent way of looking at a system. But whereas as a rule, Mishpat is placed before Tzedakah, generally. So which one comes first? First we find Mishpat Tzedakah. Here, characteristically enough, Tzedakah is in the foreground. Here, in this phrase, generally we say, first do justice, and then we have the concept of Tzedakah. And in this particular phrase here, it's Tzedakah which comes first, and then it's followed by Mishpat. Why that? Because generally, this again, generally, first comes Mishpat, then Tzedakah. So runs the rule. Why? Because Tzedakah can never make good and can never atone for Mishpat, which has been transgressed. Okay, he's going to shift. He's shifting into another little discussion here. In general, why do we find Mishpat coming first? Why do we find justice first? Because if we're not fulfilling that which we have the right to demand, if my stuff is on my neighbor's property and I don't remove it, or I steal from him and do other things that transgress Mishpat, then the fact that I'll do Tzedakah with him... Right. You can't... What's his language here? It can never atone for the lack of Mishpat. If you're not doing that which is the letter of the law, you're not abiding by the rules that the system has put in place, then you're doing benevolence on the side... doesn't make up for a tone for the fact that the rules themselves are being violated. So that in general we always find Mishpat comes first. First we do that which everybody knows they have the right to demand. Appropriate behavior according to the laws that are in place. And then we have the expectation that everyone's going to be benevolent. That's the general order of things. Yeah? Quick question? No?
Well, there are more opportunities to do justice than
right.
Tzedakah. Have opportunities all day.
That's right. To rob, continues a first, or act dishonestly with one hand, and to give charity from what had been dishonestly acquired with the other, is an abomination to Jewish ideas. No such thing. Against an offering brought from the product of robbery, a person brings to the holy temple, he brings a cow, and he says to God, I want to offer this in gratitude and thanks. From a stolen cow, so God hurls his verse from Isaiah, I love ohev mishpat sone gezel ba'avlo. I love justice and I hate thievery. I am God, I love justice, I hate robbery and offerings. One may approach nearer to God only with clean hands. Hence, mishpat first, then tzedakah. That's the general rule. Make sense? That throughout the Torah, you almost always, whenever you find these two phrases, first phrase is almost always mishpat, justice. And then we find the phrase of tzedakah. Now again, I want to see, he's creating a pyramid here. When you talk between north, south, and east, west, which one comes first? First, the north, south. You have to have your moral bearings. When you have your moral bearings, and you're a pure soul, then you can relate to man. Good. Now that we're relating to man, which form of relating to man comes first? Justice. You gotta fulfill that which the rules are. You gotta be honest, you gotta be straight. Then you go to the expectation that as a duty we will feel the need to be benevolent. That's the way the pyramid should go, so that if you were building that simple pyramid, it would be morality, man to God, then justice between man and man, and then, again, charity is the English word, but tzedakah between man and man. And here, within the pillar of man-to-man relationship, the order is reversed. First, the phrase of the Torah is tzedakah, and then we go to mishpah, which is backwards from the way that it almost always is. Says Rav Hirsch, what's the deal? It's not going to sneak by him. Now, you and I may not have noticed that, but, you know, that's why he wrote his commentary and we just read it. Says Rav Hirsch, but here, tzedakah is placed first. For here, it is a question of the Jewish protest against the principles of life and the rules of the state in Sodom. Here we have a context. This is Rav Hirsch again continuing his theme that he's been discussing, that the reason why this episode here is to teach us, Avraham's descendants, the contrast between the life that Avraham was creating and the life that was being lived in Sodom, between these two pillars. So that this whole episode is in a overt protest against the life of Sodom. And because this is not just a simple statement of the two concepts in which Mishpat would come before Tzedakah, this is a protest to the question of Jewish principles of life, we're going to reverse the order. Why? Let's keep reading. Because not Mishpat, it's not justice, but Tzedakah is the word, or the meaning the world-redeeming word, which the house of Avram is to carry in the world and through the world. In this context, we're going to stress tzedakah more than mishpat. Why? Because how far even justice, even man-made justice, is from the justice that God teaches, is sung by the Jewish singer, meaning David, King David in his Tehillim, that even mishpatim, even justice, bal yidum, quoting from a verse in Tehillim, u'mishpatim bal yidum, that even your laws will not be known to the non-Jewish world, meaning the non-Jewish world has hardly any idea of it, meaning even justice laws, we're going to read a little bit, we'll go back, even justice laws that we have, the non-Jewish world has hardly any idea of it. They have a system, but it's not the system. Mishpat, yes, a kind of mishpat, rules in Sodom too. Sodom had laws. Just to get at what he's discussing, just to bring modern examples, Nazi Germany also had mishpat. They had a very refined and sophisticated system of justice and judgment. Iran today also does. The concept of mishpat is a concept that almost every nation in the world has a concept. But what are the principles that drive their mishpat? What are the principles that define, right? So we've already learned from Mefarsh, you have to be morally rooted
first
to then come up with a system that's going to make sense. If you're not morally rooted, well then, without an anchor in morality, well, meaning Jewish morality, well then you'll come up with all sorts of systems. I quoted on Shabbos, I'll refer to it again right now. Ken Spiros, a historian, lives in Israel right now in Jerusalem, wrote a book called World Perfect, in which he describes, he did a study, and he came up with six ideals that the people of the world, not Jews, believe in will create the perfect world. Justice and peace and benevolence, whatever they were, things which we would, yeah, of course that makes sense. And he went through showing that all six of those ideals were introduced to the world through the Torah. And before the Jews introduced them to the world, as much as today we all think of them as like, duh,
yeah,
that it wasn't that way. An example that I brought was leaving babies on hillsides if they were the wrong gender, or they were a little malformed, or they were lefty. And in Rome, for example, he has an entire chapter in which he quotes philosopher after philosopher describing the justice, the correctness to society in removing the ill and those who couldn't care for themselves, because society will be better if we leave these children to die on a hilltop. So that they had actually, and this is not like he dug this up, this is well known, it's just most of us don't really pay attention, that in highly sophisticated philosophically driven Roman society, it was noble and correct to leave a child to die on a hilltop.
It was all intellectual.
Correct. So says Rav Hirsch, it was mishpat. It was mishpat in Roman society. It was justice. It was correct. It was better for the world to behave this way. So if you claimed against them that where is the mishpat in this world, they would say, what do you mean, where is the mishpat? They created a system of mishpat. They created a system what they believed was justice. But it's not a world of tzedakah, and it's certainly not a morally driven, initially north-south, God-man relationship that gives us that anchor.
Right.
So that's what Hirsch is discussing, just bringing that in as an example of, you can have mishpat without tzedakah. Meaning, let me just summarize that. Within the Torah worldview, how does a Jew behave? First we do mishpat, because our laws of mishpat are Torah-based, and then we move to tzedakah. But if you're talking about a non-Torah-based society, at where do we drive the stake in and say, we protest your society? We're not going to protest that you have a system of mishpat. We're going to protest that you have no tzedakah that drives that system of mishpat. Let's see how he says that. Meaning, the non-Jewish world has hardly any idea of it, of our mishpat. Yes, a kind of mishpat rules in Sodom too. Yeah, Sodom shows us how a pleasure-seeking world, sunk in sensual pleasure, which only values a person for the pleasure he can give, and at the end twists the idea of strict justice to a double-edged sophism, and with the maxim shali shali shalcha shalcha, what is mine is mine, and what is yours is yours, being necessitated as a crime and relieving it as folly as a crime. Okay, I don't even want to get into the whole this 5-6 line sentence, other than the idea, meaning in Sodom there was a system of justice that said what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine, and I won't dare touch your stuff as long as you don't dare touch my stuff, ever. Under the regime of Sodomite justice, where only achievement, but not necessity, is considered as a ground for a claim, poverty and wretchedness are despised, and at most, strangers who are prospective, profit-bringing rich men, like Lot, may be admitted, but begging is prohibited, and the improvident, hungry unfortunates are treated as criminals and can only expect jail and being moved on.
Whoa.
That was it was a system. Could you say there was no mishpat in Sodom?
No.
There was mishpat. They had a system. You're a beggar, we'll kill you. That's mishpat. That's the system. You're a burden on society. We can't deal with you. You're a parasite. We can't handle it. You are dangerous to it. It was a system of mishpat, but it was a mishpat without any form of tzedakah. Therefore, justice without tzedakah becomes perverted into uncharitableness and harshness. In contrast to this, the testament of Avraham to his children stresses tzedakah before mishpat. So when God says to Avram, in this contrast to Sodom, why do I need to tell Avram about what's going to be taking place? Because Avraham represents the exact opposite of this. And we start with the concept of tzedakah first. In certain cases, the legal code of the children of Avram recognizes tzedakah as mishpat. Sometimes they're going to recognize tzedakah as the system of justice in the following halacha. I'll read the Hebrew. Kofen al midas Sodom. Now this is a brilliant halacha that he brings in over here. There's a law in the Gemara discusses that says what would be in a situation in which, let me make up an example. Let's say I have a chair. I have a chair in shul. I brought a special chair. Or a cushion. I brought a cushion because the seats are uncomfortable. I brought a special cushion. It's a type of cushion that would not deteriorate with use. It's of some special material. It's going to last forever. And I'm not in shul. Somebody comes in and they see the cushion and they want to use it. do I have a right to say you're not permitted to use it? Now, if I have an argument that you're using it will ruin it and will detract from my ability to use it, then I have every right to say, I'm sorry, I paid good money for this, I had it made specially for me. If you use it, I will not be able to use it. Mm-hmm. I'm not obligated to give up my object for you. That's mishpat, right? But let's say it won't make a difference to me. It's made out of a material, it's going to last longer than I will in this life. So that I will lose nothing by your using it, and I'm not there to use it. So it's not like you're taking it from me, it's otherwise going to sit there. Do I have a right to demand that you not use my thing?
Yes.
Says the Gemara, in a situation of Zenehene, will this one will benefit, and this one will not lose anything, we force him to allow its use based on the principles of Sodom, that the owner should not become like Sodom. And that's the phrase the Gemara uses. We force you to allow its use based on the principles of Sodom. Because Avram is the antithesis of Sodom. If you're going to lose from it, then it's not your... Of course you don't have to let him use it, because why should I lose? It's my money, I bought it, it's my thing. I'm not forced to do that. But if I'm not going to lose anything, if it doesn't hurt me at all, and a Jew doesn't want to give it up to somebody else when it doesn't cost him anything, we force you. Basin will force you when they will say, you're not a Sodomite. And we won't allow you to become one.
Whoa.
Says Rav Hirsch, that's Abrahamic law. That's the difference that we have in our story. And the Torah stresses that by putting which word first? Tzedakah. Not Mishpat, because Sodom had a form of Mishpat. But what we have that they don't is Tzedakah. And that's what we give. That's what the Torah stresses. That's the trait that Avraham adopted and passed down to us, and that we read this story to stress to ourselves what it is that we represent different from Sodom. Four lines from the bottom of page 321, and it is the Jewish conception of tzedakah which Avraham is to recommend to his children, not that charity which makes the giver proud and humbles the recipient. Not that kind of charity. Not the charity that says, you need me, and I'm here the one privileged to stand in my home, to open my door, and to give you something so that the recipient feels totally lowly and nothing. Nor that care for the lower classes, which, for the protection of the rich, does not wish to allow the poor to reach the stage of despair and desperation. Not those kinds of charity, where I'm doing this only because if you, the poorer class, fall even farther down, it's going to be a bigger burden for me. So I'll take care of you now to save me from bigger problems in society. That's not the tzedakah that Avraham passes on to his children, but, top of page 322, the act of duty to which every necessitous person is given the right by God to claim. You need something? God gives you the right to claim, the right to expect that a fellow Jew will have the duty incumbent upon himself to help him. To which the poor can stand upright before the rich, and which makes the rich consider themselves merrily as administrators of a treasury which belongs to the poor. Beautiful, strong language. The word tzedakah in Hebrew is tzedek, righteousness, justice. Because the one who is receiving, we have a duty to be benevolent to him. We are administrators of God's wealth, but it's not ours. And it belongs to he who he deems it relevant to, and if they're at your door and you have the ability to take care of them, it is a duty to do so. He doesn't have a right to demand it because it's not justice, but he has a right to expect that we will feel the duty to be involved and to give. If there is a trait that we pass down to our children that is the culture of Jewish life, it is this trait, the concept of the Jewish duty to be benevolent. It's not above and beyond. It's not a really nice thing. It is our task. It is our mission. It is our responsibility to be that kind of person. And that's a very different perspective than someone who looks at himself and says, like, wow, look at me. I did this. A Jew, your job, mission, responsibility is to be benevolent. Mishpat and tzedakah, but tzedakah comes from tzedek, from righteousness and from justice, because that is how we give. That's the attitude that we have and given. Continues Refersh, and it is second paragraph on page 322, and it is not just absolute tzedakah and mishpat which will rescue and free the world from crime and misery, but only both in the Jewish sense of being fruit matured on the tree of living before God. And now he ties it back into the first pillar. These two concepts on the pillar of between man and man, the concept of justice and the concept of tzedakah, but those both come after which pillar? The pillar of the north-south relationship of man living a morally pure life before God. So when does these pillars of righteousness and justice rescue the world from misery and crime? If they're matured, in his language, matured on the tree of living before God. Vishamru derech Hashem. First you will guard the way of God in order to then fulfill tzedakah and mishpat. The whole person must live before God. His whole life must be spent in the idea of duty before God. Then his whole behavior between man and man will only be making the dictates of duty in reality. If he lives his moral life, then he will transfer that into his relationship between man and man, and it will become simply that of a reality. But not only, says the first, where is this going to come from? Where are we? How are we going to save the world from crime and misery? The 13 of us sitting in this room right now, how are we going to do this? Says the first, not by external means, not by the enforcement of rules and laws, not by world upheavals. He's not even talking about the Arab Spring. He's writing 100 years before, which send a red peril against the palaces and manners of the rich. No! From within, by an inner revolution of minds and feelings, by the production and education of the generation to a sense of duty. Can such men of duty be gained who will hand this God-dictated testament of the ancestor all the way down to the last descendant as a guiding last will? Vishamru derech Hashem. Avraham's children will teach the way of God to do tzedakah and mishpat. We live in a generation where, you know, sense of duty. America stands for rights. The Bill of Rights set us on a course where everyone grows up with a feeling of, what are my rights? And that, as great as this country has been to the Jewish people, the safety that it's provided, the economic security and affluence, which we have not had in mass for this long, since who knows how long of European history, but it's come with a price. It's come with a sense of rights and privileges. Jews in Europe didn't grow up with a sense of rights and privileges, I can tell you that much. That was not the underlying, you know, sense of their existence. Because it wasn't that, the world wasn't that way. But Americans, we do. I have a right to this, and I'll sue you if you violate it. And the Jewish ideal, what needs to be inculcated into our children, are not rights, but responsibilities and duties. And a generation has to be raised of men of duty who will take the God-given dictates from Avraham and pass it on to the next generation. We are obligated to be kind. We are duty-bound to be benevolent. Continuing in the middle of that, the generation must be born and brought up not to a belief in God, but to a fulfilling His command. It's not just, I believe. No. Are you fulfilling? Are you living a life that is duty-bound? Otherwise, wisdom could well lead to respect for law and fear to charity. But in the midst of all the theoretical belief in God, people could degenerate to ro'im v'chatoim, wicked and evil, under the pretext of what is right and proper. Stuck in Mishpat can be so worked that one could well say, woe to him that falls into the hands of one who administers charity or with Yoshev al Mishpat. Okay, what he's saying right here is, let's just read that again, is, if it's just a belief, if it's not an active sense of living with fulfillment of God's will, so then wisdom, because you have wisdom, you'll respect the law. And out of fear, you'll give charity. But if it's just theory, you will then find a way to construct the laws into ways which will eventually degenerate into the same Sodom type laws. As history has shown us over and over and over again, Germany, just as an example, was the seat of enlightenment. It was the pinnacle of enlightened Western thinking. And it created a society that was unfathomably inhumane. You couldn't imagine. But they didn't look at it that way. They thought they were actually, once again, purifying society. Says Rav Hirsch, and I bring them as an example because he's writing in Germany. He's writing in the seat of enlightened thinking. He's writing to the Reformed Jews who have taken this enlightened thinking and said, we're going to redo Torah. We're going to create it in a reform. We're going to change it. We're going to enlighten it. We're going to open it up to society. And he's writing to that society that he's living in. And he's writing 65 years before the greatest crime against humanity was going to be perpetuated. Who would have imagined? He says, if it's just theory, if it's not action, if you're not living the life of God, even though I believe in all of the theory. No. If you're not living it, then the theory will eventually be construed and shaped and misformed into the ro'im v'chatoyim la'Hashem, the same evil and wickedness that we had in Sodom, under the pretext of what is right and proper. Yeah. 60 years before the Holocaust, he's writing this in Germany. Can you imagine? Yeah.
Who is he?
This is Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, Samson Raphael Hirsch. That is why we can understand, continues Rav Hirsch, how at the time when the foundation stone of the Jewish people was laid with Mila and brotherly love of mankind, again, where is the story of Sodom taking place in the Torah? It's right after Avram is circumcised, he makes a pact, a covenant with God on his physical body to become a moral creature. And then he shows in the midst of his pain and suffering, and he looks out for his brethren, and he brings them into his home, and he says, let me take care of you. In the midst of this crossroad between man giving up of himself to God, and man giving up of himself to his fellow man, at this point, the people who were to be educated in Shmiras Derech Hashem Lasot Stokom Mishpat, in following the way of God, and in righteousness and in justice, that's now that Avraham, who's the instrument for this training, was told of the judgment of God, which at that same time was to be exercised on a province of cities, proud in their strength and success, in which the way of Hashem had been lost in moral degeneracy, and tzedakah and mishpat had been transformed to their very opposite. Reverse puts, right now is where this story takes place. Right as the angels leave from Avraham's home, at that crossroads of those intersection of the two concepts that Avraham lays as a foundation for us, Sodom has to be removed. Because Avraham is now introducing a nation into the world that's going to bring the world to rid itself of that crime and misery. Which we, by the way, parenthetically, as I teach this class here in Atlanta, Georgia, have failed in. Because we're still here in the exile, and we have not lived the life that has put the Jewish people on that moral pedestal to show the world these two ideals, which is why we are still here. But it was at that moment that Sodom, Avram is informed, you are going in this direction, you were just informed that you were going to have a son, she was just told about by these two visitors, and now the opposite, and those cities are going to be destroyed. There's no place for them in my world. Last paragraph. By this insight into the ways of God's rule given to the ancestor, now that we have this insight, what do we gain from this story? Now that we see that contrast, the bleak borders of the once luxuriant, blooming acres of Sodom and Amorah become reminding memorials for all the descendants of Avraham who are to be trained in the opposite, in going in the way of God and in justice and in righteousness, which more than anything else demonstrate visibly the results of forsaking it. And if you remember, God says the cities of Sodom should never be rebuilt. They're just going to remain that way, because they're going to be an everlasting memory, a testimony to the two opposite directions that the world was going in, and that there's no place in the world for the principles of Sodom and Gomorrah, and that we are in charge of then bringing out the way of God into the world, both in our north-south God-man relationship as well as our man-to-fellow man. Beautiful. Okay, we'll continue next week. We will continue the following week as already Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.